Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My extra special guest tonight is singer, international recording artist, and WICN host with the most, Michelle Wilson. She hosts WICN's Vibe Time, currently on mornings, weekdays, 6 to 9 a.m. Michelle, welcome to the show. It is such a pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise.
Now, I'm going to start with some WICN stuff first, but then I want to talk. I've always wanted to talk to you as a singer. When did you first come to the station?
I first came to WICN to perform at a Brown Bag concert, which Brian Barlow had arranged.
Oh, wow.
So at that concert, which I believe was in 2004.
Okay.
So it must have been the spring. No, I think it was the fall Brown Bag concert. Yeah. And so as we were talking after the show, Brian
drafted you.
Very cleverly managed to get me to volunteer to train to be a disc jockey. What we were talking about was the music that we both loved so much, you know, Ruth Brown, Etta James, that kind of stuff. Some of which I had just performed at the Brown Bag concert. But he said that these headphones are cutting in and out, sorry. He asked me if I'd ever considered being a DJ, and I hadn't. But interestingly, this wasn't all that long after May Kramer had died. May Kramer, of course, the wonderful host of the blues program on WGBH for, you know, 25 or 30 years. And I used to listen to her every single weekend driving home from gigs. She had offered to train me to potentially take her place at GBH. But at the time, I was just too busy being an important blues figure. And I was like, well, no, I don't have any interest in doing that. That's, you know, sorry, that's your bag, not mine. And then, of course, May passed away, and I was just, I was gobsmacked. Oh, I cannot believe I turned down that opportunity to learn from her like that. What a maroon. So then later on, when I was talking to Brian and he asked me again, I thought, oh, May's, she's still on my team here. She's like poking at me from, yeah. You know, and I was like, yeah, I'll do that. And so Brian said at that time, and he probably said this to you too and to many other people, he said, well, you got to come in to the studio and you got to start learning the equipment before you find out whether or not you have any aptitude for it. So you kind of got to put in, a little bit of work, and you may or may not have an aptitude for it. So if you want to, come on in. So I took him up on that and came to Worcester again. I was living in Cambridge at the time.
And okay, wait a minute. So the GBH gig would have been a lot closer.
At that time,
oh,
indeed.
My God.
Indeed, it would have. So I came out to, I guess I was living in Medford, but close enough. Came out to train on the equipment, and Brian showed me how to use it. And man, 20 minutes later, I was just absolutely at home.
And you were...
And I had never used any equipment before. I'm not the only female singer of a certain age who was actively discouraged from knowing anything about,
absolutely,
learning anything about the equipment. Those were different days. You know, nobody meant any harm, but the lines were very clearly drawn in the sand. And, you know, so I had no idea. But it was interesting how quickly I took to it. And then not more than a couple weeks later, they had me on the air. And then not more than a month after that, they gave me a second show.
Okay, I need to know. Now, for you as a singer, then, at that point, it's so different doing radio because the audience isn't there. Did you feel any kind of weirdness about that?
Yes. Still do.
Huh. Is it just different, or is it not as personal for you?
The thing is, Mark, that at that time in my life, 2000-ish to, about 10 years ago. So, you know, a good long hunk of time. I had recorded my last album for Rounder. 9/11 had happened. I was very grateful for everything that happened to me and absolutely blown away by the success that I had and the support that I had. Putting those records out for Rounder and traveling and touring, I couldn't figure out what was going on. Me? But yeah, okay. However, after 9/11, everything changed in an instant. And I know this is nowhere near as important as the way life changed for so many people, but for people in the music business, what happened was, before that, you know, it's all well and good to be popular and to have your record selling and to be on the radio and all the different things. But what you need more than anything else is money. And I had no idea, at least at that time. I don't think it's as true anymore since the internet has afforded so many people the opportunity to be more creative and put their creative work out there in the world. But at that time, although there was an internet, it wasn't like it is now, and there were still record companies. And so if you were serious, you needed to be on a record label. And what I didn't know at the time was that an awful lot of people who are successful, probably in all the arts, but the only one I had any experience with was music, you need access to money. And so that might be because you come from a family with money. Yeah. It might be because you have access to it another way. I had no idea about any of that. I just assumed the record company would pay for everything.
Oh,
well, I didn't. I mean,
yeah, who knew?
I had no experience at this. I had no friends in the music business. I had no mentors. I mean, I did after I got involved. I had so many people helping me, still do, of course. But at that time, it was all just, yeah, sure, great. So I was constantly getting off. I mean, so now we're talking about, I got signed in, I think, late 1993. My first record came out in 94. So it had been about 8 or 10 years. And we'd put out 4 records for Rounder. The last record, Wake Up Call, came out right in 2001. And by 2001, before 9/11, we were on tour. It was really difficult because you couldn't really make enough money at the gigs to pay the band and pay for the gas and pay for the hotels. And I didn't have any merch people. Again, I didn't know idea how to do it. So it was me, you know, singing and then selling the merch. And then, you know, it was an enormous amount of work. And I was really tired, really tired all the time.
I totally get that.
But what was part of it, and this is the part that dried up right after 9/11, is that there were benefits from various corporations, airlines, hotels, restaurants, you know, so you would kind of get some of that stuff paid for so that you could go out on these tours or road trips. After 9/11, that was all over with. Boom. In one day, gone. All of it gone. Gone. No more. Boom. Gone.
Why?
Well, you know, everything changed. I mean, for the
people just didn't feel like doing it anymore?
I think the corporate landscape, they saw what was coming, and they pulled their wagons in a circle, so to speak, and they started cutting out anything that was extraneous, anything that seemed, well, this isn't actually making us any money. Let's just not do this anymore. You know, no one.
So that leaves you
completely, just absolutely adrift. So by 2004, a couple years later after this, I was completely at the beginning of a horrible, horrible part of my life that was just, Jesus. It's not even worth talking about anymore because it isn't true anymore. But so I wasn't actually singing that much. Even when the gigs started to come back, my head was still so far that I wasn't really doing much of anything. And both of my parents were also approaching the end of their lives. And so as anyone who's been through that knows, it's just a really weird time. And you don't, you know, so it was a lot of really painful, bad stuff going on for a really long time. So what WICN, sorry to ramble, but there it is. What WICN did for me was it reintroduced me to my love of music. And it was sort of a relief to not be the person performing because, and I don't think I'm alone in this, when the, you know, thing started to happen, the bad thing, the first person that I took it out on was myself. You know, naturally, I must deserve this, blah, 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 blah. I'm not even going to go into it anymore because it's not worth talking about. But I think many people might understand that approach to life.
Absolutely.
And so I didn't love music anymore. I didn't love anything. I was just literally just trying to figure out how to get out and end it. And because I'm a chicken, I never did.
And thank God you are.
That's what I say too. Thank God I'm such a chicken. But so WICN truly saved my life.
Excellent.
Really, actually, really, seriously, truly saved my life. At that time, it was only two shows a week.
Can I ask you what the names of the shows were?
Well, it was Jazz and Blue on Saturday afternoons.
Okay, and Voices of Jazz?
And Voices of Jazz. I took over from Monica Hatch when
That's
she
right.
left to dig more deeply into her singing career.
Now, were you playing the music you wanted that you would sing, or were you playing other music? Like, it's both of them sound like jazz shows.
And well, you
are really passionate about blues and music in that vein. So were you able to stick that in there?
Absolutely. The show on Saturdays, it was the only reason I agreed to do it was because I felt that this, and still feel, that this particular genre of music, which if I were to classify it, would be roughly late 40s to mid-50s rhythm and blues, it wasn't getting played enough. Given the level of influence and importance that that style of music has on American popular music subsequent to that time and even during that time, it's interesting that it didn't get played enough. People didn't consider it to be serious music. It was pop music, but it also wasn't pop music. So many of those songs, as done by the original African-American artists, were co-opted by white artists. And I'm not putting anybody down because everybody's just trying to make their way in the world. But if you've ever heard, you know, Miss Georgia Gibbs, her version of a Laverne Baker tune, and then you've heard Laverne Baker, you're like, what's going on here? And of course, as we now know, I didn't know it at the time, but I learned more and more that this, you know, this is part of American culture, is let's just take all this really good stuff that these people are doing. We'll just take it and do it ourselves and leave them out of it. Sure. And, you know, still going on today, but certainly not to the degree that it was going on before. So to be able to have this platform to play this music and talk about these people, some of whom were still alive, not all of them, of course, but people like Ruth Brown were still around. Etta James was still around. And so to later on be able to meet these people and know that I was doing a tiny little part to keep them alive, keep their voice alive in our culture, man, that made me feel great. And it was the beginning of my starting to rediscover, well, hey, wait a minute, wait, this is good. I want to do this. And so that's WICN truly saved my life.
And your singing career. Did playing the music encourage you to sing the music more?
Mm-mm, not at all.
That's weird. That's
for a long time.
Really?
For a long time. I mean,
what was it about singing?
Well, I just, you know, I felt completely unworthy in that I had ruined my chance and I didn't deserve another chance. You know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. When you're in that head, you know, your little monkey is going to find a way to turn anything that happens into a vehicle for making sure that you understand how worthless you are. I'm not alone in that. I know I'm not alone in that. And so it took a long time to climb back up out of that. I felt absolutely no desire to sing at all. I was still singing a little bit, don't get me wrong. You know, a little gig here and there, gig here and there. I went to Israel in 2004. I was there for a couple weeks touring all over Israel and playing with an Israeli band. A guy who was American born but lived in Israel, married an Israeli woman. And man, that really started to change things for me because over there, they get a lot of government support, as many European countries do. They support the arts a lot more than American does. And so I remember very clearly this moment. We were driving down this boulevard in Tel Aviv, and it was a had a, what do you call it in the middle, like a divider with the trees.
Yeah.
I don't know what the word for that is, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And it had big palm trees, but it also had signposts, and they would put cloth posters up for whatever deal was coming through town, right?
And you were there.
And that week, it was me, man. And we're driving down this highway, and it's just billboard after billboard after billboard of me. And I was looking up at it. It was an out-of-body experience, but something inside me was like, there's no way I'd be here doing this if there wasn't some merit to me doing it. And, you know, I know how convoluted that sounds, but it just, it started the cog slowly turning again. And so I did want to get back into it, but I also still was so diffident about it. I just felt so unworthy. I can't explain it any other way. And again, I know.
Well, I think you've explained it pretty clearly, and it is a thing that's common to a lot of people.
I think it is.
And it is.
It is, and it takes a lot of effort to get yourself out of it.
And a lot of people don't.
And a lot of people don't. So one of the things I started thinking about when I, and then of course here at WICN, you know, I had a little day job that I did, but I wasn't really doing much with myself. I was just hanging around waiting to, you know, check out, as a lot of people do.
I know they are.
And also, I think as a woman getting older, as a single woman, I was a divorced woman by that time. You know, it's hard, man. There's not a whole lot of support for you. And I'm not playing my tiny violin. It's just a statement of fact. Not perhaps as bad nowadays as it was back then, but it's still a thing. And when I started to climb back up out of it, I didn't want to go back into music. I just felt, no, not any more than I was. It just, forget about it. So that's when I started thinking about going back to school. And I had left WICN by that point because they had a general manager who just, she really didn't like rhythm and blues. She didn't like what I was doing. And she just, you know, I don't want you on my station. Fair enough. It's her call. But I kept track of WICN all those years. By that time, I was living up in New Hampshire with my sister, living on my sister's sun porch. And I had heard that WICN was looking for radio host again. So I sent in my demo tape, and they agreed to have me back. Jerry agreed to have me back.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My extra special guest, I've waited years to talk to her, is singer, international recording star, artist, morning vibe time host, that's 6 to 9 a.m. weekdays on WICN, Michelle Wilson. Michelle, I want to talk to you about some of your recordings. Are they still available?
They are out of print, but they are available.
Okay. Did you do a live recording?
I did in 2013.
Talk to me about that.
So,
is that scary for a performing artist like yourself? When you're recording in a studio, you can redo. You can do it again. You can re-record again. But doing it live, all sorts of weird stuff can happen.
That may be some people's experience. Mine is the complete opposite. So I would record a live album anytime, anywhere with absolutely no problem. Being in the studio is much more work, much more difficult. It's much more difficult to produce the energy and to get the other musicians involved to produce the kind of energy that I want to be singing in front of in a studio, because everybody's listening, everybody can hear everything, so they're very careful. That sound, that careful sound, there's nothing I hate more than that. And I can hear it on other people's recordings.
Oh, yeah.
People that I've heard live. And there's a certain energy that happens. And in the studio, although the recording may be technically perfect,
I was going to say it sounds perfected,
but it's too perfect and there's no life to it.
Got it.
Or sometimes people will go over and over. Now, this is a paradox because Ron Levy, the brilliant Ron Levy, was my first producer. And he absolutely maintained that he was an old school producer. Back in the day, they used to you know, they would make you do 100 takes if they felt like they needed that from you. And after a while, you would just become like a limp rag and do whatever they wanted. That was the point at which they were starting to get what they wanted out of you, because you were like desperate. And so Ron, he liked a number of takes, but a smart producer will figure out what works for the people he's working with. And he soon understood that I wasn't one of those people. I'm what is called a one and done, pretty much. Just, I do it once, and that's why I like live performing, because now I'm done with that. I'd like to move on to the next thing, please.
The album was called Fortune Cookie?
It is.
Where was it recorded?
Scholars.
How is the audience? That's the one thing I would really worry about. There would be some jerk in the audience that would be doing something stupid.
Oh, no. I have had that experience, but certainly not at Scholars. It was great. I wanted to make another record. I didn't have any money. I had some help booking myself back into Scholars, although I had played there before many times. Now that I'd been kind of out of the loop for a number of years, it took some talking. We had to talk Fred into it, the beautiful Fred Taylor. But he agreed, and the room was full of people that loved me and were all in favor Excellent. Of me coming back Oh. into the music thing. And to be surrounded by that kind of love that night, I'm almost crying right now thinking about it. It was one of the most moving experiences of my life. And I was like, I don't know, maybe I should do this some more. Maybe I should.
Talk to me about Destination Moon.
That's a Dinah Washington tune.
You wrote and produced that?
The show, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The show. So I wanted to do... I still do, actually. I still haven't fully realized this, but I liked the idea of talking a little bit more about, you know, the artist, the music, the Yep. songwriter, whatever the deal was. And so I thought a little show where we made it plain that that was going to be part of it, as opposed to a musical show where maybe you shouldn't. It's funny because things are so much different now. Many people now do a lot more talking than they used to. I think all that started during COVID because they were in their living room, you know.
They had nothing else to do except...
Well, no, it was a different relationship. They were speaking into the void, you know, just like we do on the radio. And so it changed everything for many people, I think. And so I really had a good time putting that together. We put it on a couple of times. I was never able to stage it the way that I really would love to.
Could it happen in the future?
It certainly could.
That'd be something. When you're touring, like, and you're playing in Europe a lot.
I'm going in a couple weeks.
Where?
Switzerland.
Yeah. Yodelay-hee-hoo. Do you always have the same band?
Oh, no.
Okay. Talk to me about what that's like. Do they have a band for you, or?
So for the European work, most of the time, if you're going to go over there with your band, I've been very fortunate to go over there. The last few times I went over there singing, I went over with Anthony Gerassi. He had me sing on a couple of his records, and he took me over there a few times. And Duke Robillard had me on a couple of his albums, and I did some gigs with Duke. And I'm going over in a couple of weeks to play with a wonderful Swiss musician and his band. He just called me up and invited me. So most of the time you're playing with someone else. I have gone to Europe with my own band, and I hope to do that again someday.
Do you rehearse when you obviously must go through some rehearsals with...
Sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. It really all depends on what's going on.
So you just have to pick it up. What about arrangements or anything? Nothing?
Well, usually it's all sent ahead of time. You know, you'll send the... that's a really great question, Mark. You always ask really great questions. But that's a... I actually like to be able to change things up depending on what mood I'm in, or maybe I want to change the feel of a song. Maybe it was a ballad, right, but tonight I'd like to do it as a boogaloo, okay? And I usually have a very clear idea in my mind, and as long as I can communicate that to the musicians, usually we can go like, oh, okay, yeah, let's try that. some musicians aren't into that. They need much more preparation, and they want to do it exactly like the recording. So if they've learned your material from your recordings, they want to do it exactly like the record. So the most important, and I've played with a lot of different bands, both here in the States and overseas. The most important, this is my opinion, I don't know if it's true for anybody else. When you're in a situation like that, the most important thing is that the least comfortable person on stage feel as comfortable as possible.
Huh.
It's way more important than me. It's way more important than anything. And so if you, sometimes you have to do stuff that, you know, you wish you could have done something different, but the most important thing is the feeling among the musicians. And so I consider that to be a really big part of my job, that you sort of scope it out when you start playing. You know, maybe you have a rehearsal, maybe you don't. Maybe you're just going to go right on stage. They've learned the songs from the recordings, and you're just going to do it. You stick to the arrangements because you don't want to make
because
them...
Because you don't want to make them...
I don't want to make them anxious. I don't want them worrying.
Amazingly enough, we're completely out of time, and I got to one page of my questions.
Maybe I'll have to do a two-parter.
We could. I'm absolutely down with that. But especially come back from Switzerland and give a firsthand report. I would love that.
Switzerland's a great place. They love music over there so much.
My extra special guest tonight has been singing international recording artist and thankfully WICN host of Vibe Time, Morning Vibe Time, on every morning, 6 to 9 a.m. She has recordings like Fortune Cookie, we talked about, Evil Gal Blues, So Emotional, Trying to Make a Little Love, Wake Up Call. I think those are all your recordings. It's been Michelle Wilson. Michelle, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Mark.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.